College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 12:07. You are listening to The Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. I am so excited about today's show. I am in Columbus, Ohio. I am not in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or the Cottage Grove Basement Studio. I traveled to Ohio on Thursday afternoon because I saw an amazing story and wanted to be a part of it. You know, our community is so much more global now than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago because of the internet and social media. Our neighbors are not just the people who live on our street or our city. Our neighbor is anyone in need. And so I was on social media and Miss Bobby D, one of my church members, sent me a link to a story where a little boy in London, Ohio, wandered away from home, nonverbal, autistic, and in the middle of the night ran blocks away from his home at full speed to a nearby body of water. And as I kept watching the video, I saw that there were two officers who jumped in that cold creek and pulled the child out with so much compassion and so much love and so much care and wrapped their jackets around him and saved that child's life. I said, oh, yeah, I got to get a ticket. Where is London, Ohio? It's near Columbus. I'm flying into Columbus. I'm going to London, Ohio, and I am going to meet a child who was saved. I'm going to give away some combination door locks, and I'm going to see if the London Police Department would partner with me. And I call these people. They don't know me from Adam. Y'all know me. They don't know me. And I said, listen, I'm not the village crazy lady, but I want to come and bring some door locks so that any other parent who has a child with autism can get one free of charge, no questions asked, no registration needed. These folks in London, Ohio opened up a room for me. The officers were there. The parents came. Every lock that I brought has been given away to a family in need. And I have to thank the London, Ohio Police Department for trusting me with their residents and the people that they serve. So I asked Sergeant Donovan Cooper from London, Ohio Police Department to please join me on the show this morning. And he said yes. So he is here on the Shaletta Show, courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Sergeant Donovan, thank you so much for being here.
Shaletta, thanks for the invite. And you just mentioned that you partnered with us. You came in as a partner, but I think we all left with a friendship.
I think so, too. And you have to talk to me about your police department. I mean, I felt like I was hanging out with family. Y'all were laughing together, joking together. Right. You all are a small but mighty force. Talk to me about the London, Ohio Police Department and just this friendship and camaraderie and support system that you've created, not just for the officers on your force, but the community. Everybody that came in there, y'all was like knowing each other by name. The kids who were trying to wander off while their parents were trying to get a lock for me and figure out how they worked. Y'all were blocking the doors to make sure they were safe. I felt like I was with family.
Yeah, I'm born and raised in London, Ohio. I won't tell you my age, but I've been with the department for 24 years now. And I could have went other places, larger departments, better pay, but the community aspect that we show people here is we want you to feel like family. We want our officers to be treated like family within. We're a small agency, as you said. We probably have 22, 23 officers on staff right now. We're a community of about 11,000 is our community eight square miles of jurisdiction that we cover. We're not in the inner city of Columbus, but we're close enough to where we can go there for activities if we have to, but still come back to that small town feel. And I think that's what's helped us. You know, we pride ourselves on knowing the people, getting to know the people, helping out. And even within, we also treat each other like family because, you know, this job's not easy. You know, we get officers nationwide get negative press all the time. And so internally, we want you to know that, you know, Officer Fout, who jumped into the water that evening, he couldn't be there yesterday with us because his wife's currently expecting their second child. And we value that. We want to know, like, oh, okay, we'll be there. We'll have a gift basket when the child arrives. You know, we'll do this. It's just our close-knit. And that's how we, you know, the golden rule, right? And that's why, you know, when I say friendship, you're welcome back in London, Ohio, anytime you want.
Well, I just appreciate the work that you did, and I saw the care with which you greeted every family that came, how you had bags for the kids and sent me home with a gift bag and treats for my own children. I just cannot thank you enough for everything that you all did today and for allowing me to be a part of your family. Now, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but when we come back, Sergeant Donovan, I want you to take me back to that night when you all got the call and Kenyon ran out of that house and your officers ran right into the lion's den to rescue him from that creek. More with Sergeant Donovan Cooper when we come back. I am talking to Sergeant Donovan Cooper with the London, Ohio Police Department to find out what was going on that night, what they were doing, how things were happening as the story began to unfold. I heard the terror and the fear in that mother's voice when she called 911 and got a dispatcher. And she said, my nephew is visiting. He left the door open and my autistic son ran out. We need help now. Sergeant Cooper, take me back to that night last week when that call came in.
Sure. So it was last Tuesday, on November 12th, actually, and around 6:12 p.m., our officer was, Officer Fout was patrolling the southwest side of the city, just, you know, patrol operations, driving around, you know, on his normal activity. And with the time change here in Ohio, it gets dark early. So darkness had already sat in, and he observed a small child walking down the street on the sidewalk, and he's like, something doesn't look right. You know, he's by himself. He doesn't see any parent or guardian around. He immediately, you know, training kicks in. He turns around. He's like, I need to find this child. And when he turns around to look again, the child's gone. And in the area that he's gone, there's like not any houses. There's one little business. Just the houses probably in proximity to the creek where he was found is probably the closest house is 100 yards. So he knew he couldn't have made it there that quick, you know? So then he immediately, you know, again, training over road, and he gets out of his patrol car. He's like, walks down the field down into the creek bed, and he sees the child lying in the creek, you know, and immediately jumps into action. He also had a training officer with him that night, Officer Dye, who he was training in the field training program, and, you know, and she jumps out of the car to assist, and he jumps in and brings the child to the bank. You know, hey, did you call for a medic, you know, and they wrapped the kid up, you know, got the kid warm because the child warm because, you know, we're in our transition of seasons and the water temperature was 40 degrees, you know, and, you know, I just, you know, his training took over and rescued this boy and, you know, prevailed. But I think there was a higher person to put him in that on that street at that time.
On that street at that time. He could have been two streets over. He could have been one block over. He would not have seen that. And that child likely would not still be here.
Exactly. And I truly believe in the faith of the man above. And I told him that when I wasn't working that evening, but I talked to him that evening briefly over text. And then I saw him the next day. And, you know, I said, you know, your training took over what you were supposed to do. You did. But somebody put you in that place at that time to be there to rescue this child. Because, Shaletta, you know, by the time we would have received the 911 call, which was quick, don't get me wrong, it was quick, but yeah. All of our officers, that's an all call. Any missing child, anything to do with any missing child is an all unit call. All officers would have responded to the house, right? To the house. And by the time they would have received the information, started knocking on doors, canvassing the area, calling in extra help from surrounding agencies, it would have been hard to narrow it down to that waterway, you know. And I fear it probably would have been too late. And thank God that he was there during that time.
And I have done 6, 7, 8. This is my 8th lot giveaway mm-hmm. in 7 different cities. And every time I go, I'm meeting a mother who has buried her child. And she's giving me pictures that the child has drawn, or I'm looking at video of a child who's no longer here, or funeral programs, or I'm getting a teddy bear because they just want to show some gratitude and have me connected to the child that died, who wandered off. And this was the first time that I have done a lot giveaway, and I met the child, and the child was still alive. And the mother was there with the child. And I'm here to tell you, Sergeant Donovan, I could not stop crying and didn't even realize. And I'm very conscious of TV cameras. I work in TV news. I'm 24 years in broadcasting. I forgot TV cameras was there. I was slobbering and peeing and snotting and all over myself. And when I saw that little boy, I saw my own child, and the mama came and I just grabbed onto her ankles. I couldn't even pick myself up. Talk to me what it was like when you first met the family and you saw that alive little boy, knowing it was one of your fellow officers who was the reason that he is still here.
Heartwarming. That's, you know, it was heartwarming to see that the child still be here with us. But it was also being conscious, ready, like this. I have children as well. But it brought my eyes is like, I don't have an autistic child, but the people that do, you know, yourself included, and this parent is like, you know, the amount of effort that it takes you guys to run around and be more just cautious, you know, and it just put me on like alert. Like I need to treat each kid like they, you know, they may not know, they may be drawn to a different, like a waterway, you know, they may, you know, I guess it just opened my eyes up a little bit more per se with that and the training that we had this year on autism. I kind of teared up a little myself when I saw the child come in and seeing you guys interact. I'm so glad they came in at the right time to be able to meet you because, you know, with what you do, it's incredible.
I just honestly, I'm moved by the spirit. I allow the Lord to use me. And, you know, so many families came yesterday, and every lock I brought, somebody came and got it. And in fact, we had 3 left. And we were packing up, you know, we did it from 11 to 1 and we were packing up and we were folding things. And my best friend, Christopher Williams, who lives here in Columbus, who I'm staying with, who helped me, was taking locks out to the cars and everything and talking to you guys. And he was putting everything up and a lady came and she was about to cry. She was frantic. She said, I had to get here to get one of these locks. I was getting my tire changed and I thought I was going to miss you guys. And she needed the exact amount. that we had left. She needed two for her house and one for her mother, the child's grandmother, who does some babysitting. So she was able to take locks for her house and her grandmother's house. So I am thankfully leaving empty-handed. And Sergeant Donovan, you know, I like to say every lock is a child's life that is saved. Every lock is a life. Every lock that is given away, that's one child who can be saved from, you know, wandering away and drowning.
Michelle, like, I didn't realize how many children we have that have autism until, like, yesterday when the parents were coming in and we were interacting with the children and the parents, and how grateful they were for you, but for us being there. And I even would ask them, like, well, if you don't mind me asking, where do you live? You know, because I want to put that in my head. And the one gentleman I met before he left, Micheletta, he lives right around the corner from me. So you don't think, like, every day I pass his house now that I'm going to do a double take just to make sure, right? And it's no fault to the parent. The children are going to be drawn to different things outside. And it doesn't mean that the parent's not watching them. They're just so quick, Micheletta. You know, like, and I'm going to be paying extra attention to his house now when I drive by, on duty or off duty, to make sure that child is if he's outside, he's with somebody, you know, and if he's not, I'm going to be knocking on the door, you know, or checking the retention ponds around our area. You know what I mean? Just to be double cautious. You know what I mean?
And Sergeant Donovan, I just thank you for your sensitivity, for your awareness, for your understanding, for the work that you all did, how y'all stayed and stuck by and stood beside me yesterday, how without asking or prompting, you prepared gift bags for the children so that when their parents left with locks, they could leave with something too. And, you know, I call this campaign Spread Love with Locks. You know, I tell people all the time, I don't have no 501c3. I don't have no nonprofit. I don't have no foundation. I'm just a mama with a mouth on a mission. And to be on a mission with you guys yesterday, it blessed my soul. And like you said, we are family now. You know, I know I'll be visiting again soon, but I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for your partnership, for raising awareness, for the sensitivity that you have and will continue to have to families who have children with autism, and the way you made everybody who came yesterday feel special and safe and loved. Thank y'all so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle, I would like to point out, my wife asked me last night, we were on our way to the football game, and how the days went, you know, and what we did. And I explained to her that I was fortunate enough to meet you and Mr. Williams yesterday and about the door locks. And she works at OSU as a nurse, and she works with a fellow nurse who has a child on the spectrum. And it's the same scenario that they're always, you know, trying to get out, trying to do this, and they're always watching him, you know, 3 feet behind, you know, to make sure, you know, he's not getting out. And I explained the door locks that you brought in. Never even crossed their mind. So what you're doing is branching out all over the nation. So you just told us about this, right? We told our whole community about this. I told my wife, who works at OSU, who has a friend who has a child on the spectrum, and she's going to tell her about the locks. And I said, you can get them on, you know, Amazon. You know, you can... something as cheap as $45 can save a child's life. And I would never have known about this had it not been for your program and you reaching out to us. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for yesterday. Thank you for being on the show. And thank you for being a blessing to the entire London, Ohio community. It is 12:29. You're listening to The Shaletta Show, and we will be right back. It is 12:34. You are listening to The Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. And I am so excited because Sylvia Fowles is getting the call to the Hall next summer. Yes, baby. Our Lynx are getting their due. We didn't get that championship. We got robbed. That's something I'll be talking about later in the show. But we got ourselves a Hall of Famer. How did this all take place? How did this voting go down? I got to get the scoop from my man, Uncle Charles Hallman, broadcasting Hall of Famer, sports writer, Hall of Famer. This man does not know how to retire. Listen, Uncle Charles, I'm going to tell you for the 511th time, when you go to the Hall of Fame, for your craft, that means it's time to sit down. You just writing and storying and stuff coming out of everyone. I said, does this man not know he is a Hall of Famer? Hall of Famers are supposed to sit down somewhere. Hall of Famers are not supposed to be still working.
That memo got lost. I didn't get that part.
You know where it's lost? It's lost in your email, because you're still doing stories and emailing people and setting up interviews. That's why it's lost, because your email box is full.
That's the problem. I need to go home now. I'm not home now. I'm at Hamlin University watching one of my former players play this afternoon.
See, still working. Uncle Charles, thank you for being on the Shaletta Show. Sylvia is going to the Hall next summer. Tell me how all this works for WNBA players, because I know about the guys and I know about the NFL Hall of Fame. I'm in Ohio right now, not too far from Canton, so I might take a trip over there and check everything out. But how does it work for WNBA players to get into the Hall of Fame?
Well, actually, it's just the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, so it doesn't just concentrate on pros. It concentrates on your body of work, so from college to pro, international. You could be a coach, you could be a player, you could be a contributor, those type of things. We all knew Sylvia was going to get in. It was just a matter of time. She shown her body of work as a college player and as a professional that it was just a matter of time. So we pretty much expected after Simone went in last year that she would be the next person coming in. Only one is still waiting for was Rebecca. She is in the five of those starters that mm-hmm. won championships, so the Lynx would all go in. So right now we're still waiting for Rebecca. But it's well-deserved. Sylvia has earned it. And it wasn't a question of if she's going to get in. The question was when. And so when Simone went in last year, we just knew that it was going to go in this year. Yeah. Open the door out. Can I go out the door? Okay.
Okay, it sounds like Uncle Charles is working on something there. He is watching one of his former players step out to chat with us here on the Shaletta Show. And it sounds like security was called. Apparently, the security guard does not know Charles Hallman is a Hall of Fame sports writer and commentator. And so there sounds like they're trying to figure out if he is in a restricted area. I hope and pray I did not get Uncle Charles Hallman in too much trouble. But it is amazing that our female athletes, especially our Lady Lynx, are getting the well-due honors that they deserve. And I'm so excited to see Fowles go into the Hall of Fame next summer. I can't wait to see Charles's reporting on that. It is going to be fantastic. And you know what it also does is it shows our young female athletes what the end of the thing looks like. You know, for me, a lot of times I and a lot of us who are my age and a little bit older, we were the first, right? I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. I was the first business owner in my family. And so I didn't really have anybody to look at and say, that's what the end of the thing is supposed to look like. This is the culmination of, you know, all of my hard work. This is, you know, how it's supposed to end, right? And for our female lady polars over at North High School and so many others, they can look at this and say, this is what it looks like. This is what I'm working so hard for. You know, it's not just the hamster wheel I'm just running and running and running on a treadmill, but there's a destination to this thing. And so, Uncle Charles, I'm just glad, you know, for the example that she is going to set for the young ladies who are looking up to her, who see her as a role model, as an example, that this is how it ends. This is what it looks like when you give it all and you do your best. You get to go to the Hall of Fame.
And if you find somebody that's better in terms of a role model, I can't think of anybody. Sweet Sil got that nickname, honestly. She is such a sweet person, and she's very giving from bottom to top. So there's nobody you can look at, and nobody more deserving right now as her. And she takes all the flowers. She takes the flower show in the shop, and she takes the truck. She takes everything. I'm looking forward to covering her induction next year. I don't want to go to Tennessee, to be honest with you. I'm trying to get out of these red states, but I'm making an exception on Sylvia's case. On Sylvia's
that you know you're going to have to go, because we're going to be living vicariously through you, those of us who cannot go, reading your story, reading your report. Since you won't retire, we trust you to tell us how things are going to go. You know, if you had to guess who she would, and you've been covering her career for a while now, if you had to guess who she would be thanking first, or who she'd be more grateful to for this success, for this milestone, you know, if you had to handicap her acceptance speech, who do you think is going to be first on the list?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be her grandmother. Her grandmother was very influential in her doing everything she's done, in terms of even going into being a mortician. That's what something that she's trying to do. I think she will definitely pay homage. If not first, it will be definitely close to the top, her grandmother. She talked about her very honestly, very humbly, and it'll be her family she'll talk about first, and then I'm pretty sure she'll thank her college coaches, and she'll talk about, you know, her time with the Lynx, and I think she'll also talk about Simone, because Simone and her, in fact, it wasn't for Simone she wouldn't have came to Minnesota, because she didn't want to play at Chicago anymore, and people forgot that she was probably one of the first stars to force her way out off a team, and was willing to sit out until a trade was made. And so she didn't want to stay in Chicago anymore. And Simone heard about that. Simone said, "Can you come to Minnesota?" She said, "Yeah, I'll be glad to come to Minnesota." And she sat out half a season before she made that move. But she told me several times she was willing to sit out. She was willing to wait. And she thought it wasn't that going to happen, because they would have made a trade a couple of times and it fell through. And she was willing to sit out. And if that meant not playing anymore, she was going to do that. She did not want to play in Chicago anymore for whatever reason, that she wanted to get out of that situation. And so it was perfect to come to Minnesota. She had the teammates that she wanted to play with. And it obviously worked out for her. She won two championships, and she also won a couple awards as well. She's just a beautiful person. I can't speak highly of her. Can't speak enough of talking about her. And I'm definitely looking forward to being there. I was there this past induction for Simone and Maya and Taj. So I can't help but be, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be there as well. It's going to be a fun time, and I'm looking forward to it. It'll be after my 70th birthday, so that'll be my post-birthday gift.
See, anybody else turning 70, they collecting their little Social Security check, they listening to my show, they cross-stitching, they fishing, they ice fishing, but you out here traveling all 17 across the states and writing stories like you, instead of 70, like you 27.
So see, I didn't do those things when I was 27. That's why I'm doing it now.
You're making up for lost time.
I'm making
now,
up for lost time.
You gotta tell me, because we didn't get to talk about it, that game with the Lynx and the New York Liberty, I swear to you, I will go to my grave saying that they stole it, that the WNBA already had the New York Liberty pick to win. This was good business for them, because there was a quote-unquote major city that had never won, and they wanted to put a bow on the story of the comeback of the franchise, and they and the refs were doing everything they could to keep our Lynx from winning. I'm going to go to the grave. In fact, I might have somebody put that on my head. They stole our championship 2024.
Well, if you remember years ago when they instituted the NBA draft lottery, and who won the first draft lottery pick? New York Knicks.
New York.
Honestly, when Cheryl her reason get fined for what her outburst after the game, you knew the league realized they did, they made some mistakes. There were several mistakes made in that game. The officiating always been horrible, but that officiating was even more so. And the thing, and I told people, the WNBA do not have professional referees. These are referees that work college games. And so, therefore, they don't understand the pro game in many cases. And until the WNBA upgrades that referee pool, you're going to have games like that when they make mistakes and they refuse to overrule it and stuff like that. The foul, the phantom foul that happened was not a foul. And you could see that over and over again. You could tell it wasn't a foul. I don't care what angle you looked at, it wasn't a foul. But then if you remember, if you heard what the New York coach said, fake it. Get that call. Okay, so she was doing her job. She told her to go fake a call. Make them make a call. Make them force them to make that call. And they did. Unfortunately, they made the wrong call. But, yeah, it might fuel this team to win it next year. I mean, because when you lose that way, almost like when they lost to L.A. years ago, they dedicated their whole season to win that game, to win that title. And that might do that again. That might fuel them, because you can't go away spending the longest offseason in pro sports thinking about that game.
No, you cannot.
And not eating you up inside, because they don't play again until April. So that's a long time to sit there and let that stuff stew and knowing that you had an opportunity to win that game and it was taken away from you. Yeah, it was stolen. It was stolen. It wasn't the Al Gore election or the Stacey Abrams election stolen, but it was stolen. And I think the WNBA is going to rule, you know, it's going to take some knocks about that game. But they got what they want. They want New York to win, and now New York won a title. Okay, so, yes, move on, and yes, make sure that don't happen again.
Yeah, if it's still upsetting me, I know the players got to be upset, because I didn't come in off the bench not one time, and I'm still steaming about it. Now, you got to tell us this. What are the Lynx going to be doing before you go? Because, just your prediction for next season. Like you said, they've got a long off season, a lot of time to think about it, a lot of time to strategize from the front office to the players. Everybody is getting input. If they called you in the office and said, hey, Uncle Charles, what do we need to do next year to win it all?
Well, you need one more player, one more athletic player that can come off the bench or not necessarily be in the starting line, but come off the bench. You need somebody that can just give them some points right away or in a hurry, those type of things. They need that. I think they got their pieces pretty much in place. Napisha, definitely, if Asia Wilson wouldn't have been in the league, she'd have been MVP. No question about that. She won Defensive Player of the Year, rightfully, and you can see how good a player she is. McBride is hopefully will be better than what she was this past year. Hopefully that Courtney Williams will now settle in and be that kind of point guard they really needed from her. Remember, she's a transplanted point guard, so that's not a position she always plays. So, you know, she makes some mistakes, so hopefully she'll be able to learn from that as well. They need another athletic player. I don't know if they can get out the draft, but they need another athletic player. And with the expansion draft coming, they're going to lose a player from that when the expansion draft comes up next month. And I don't know the draft, because they draft so late. They draft 11th. I don't know if there's anybody in the draft they can pick up. But there's some free agents out there. There's some, you know, and Minnesota's now proving themselves to be a destination place as opposed to a place you come out to retire, you know, come there to finish your last season there. So I think it's going to be something. But if they call me in, I'll give you half of the consulting fee if they call me in.
I want my 10%. I ain't going to be greedy, but I want my 10%. Uncle Charles Hallman, thank you so much for taking time from the game that you're watching, supporting one of your former students and players to be on the Shaletta Show to give us your expertise about Sweet Seal going into the hall next summer and what these Lynx can do next year to come out on top. Uncle Charles, thank you for being here.
No, thank you for having me. You have a good rest of the day.
All right, and you all stick around. We've got more to come. It is 12:54. You are listening to the Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. I've got Josh in the studio producing. Lindsay is right there with him. She's going to be taking over at some point. I can't wait. I'm so excited. And Al Shock is in the newsroom bringing us the latest on news and information that is going around that we need to know about in the Twin Cities. And I'm not in Minnesota. I miss my kids like crazy. I'm lying. I don't. I actually got a chance to sleep in until 9 o'clock. And when I got up, I did not have to make anybody breakfast, break up any fights, wash any dishes, put a load of clothes in the laundry, make up any beds. I'm in Ohio visiting my friend Christopher Williams, who I've known for 30 years, best buddy, best friend in the whole wide world, Craig, and doing a lock donation giveaway in London, Ohio. I saw the video, heard that mother calling out to police to try and desperately save her son. And when that all call went out, two officers, and some people say just happened to be on the street, but I don't believe it just happened. Everything happens for a reason. And I know that the Lord was with that child and that mother. They saw that boy running down the road and turned around and followed him, and he disappeared. Well, he jumped into one of those little ponds, those little retention ponds / creeks. And he was there and probably wouldn't still be here today had that officer not been on that block at that time, in that moment, to see him turn around, go back, look for him, couldn't find him, jumped out of his car and ran around in the dark until he found him, pulled the child out of the water, wrapped his coat around him, took him to the hospital. And I actually got a chance to meet that child yesterday. I jumped on a plane with 50 locks and donated them yesterday at one of my Spread Love with Locks events. And parents and caregivers and grandparents, aunts and uncles, social workers, case managers, foster parents all came by and got copies of my children's book. I had those there, but they got locks to save the lives of these children with autism. And, you know, I've been saying this and I can't say it enough. This is my 8th lock donation event. As of yesterday, I have given out 700 locks. But this is the first time that I have ever met the child, and the child is still alive. Every other lock donation event, I'm meeting a mother who has buried her child. This time I was able to hold that child. I was able to kiss that child. That child kissed me. He was warm. I wasn't looking at a video or a picture of a dead baby. I wasn't coming home with artwork from a child who died and their mother wanted me to have something to remember him by. I got a chance to talk to this mother. And y'all know I've been in TV news for 24 years. Okay. I know better. I know where the camera is. 24 years in news. I know where the camera is and when the camera is around. But let me tell y'all something. When that child walked in there and that woman told me that that was the baby and she was the mother that I heard on that video, I could not stop crying, y'all. I cried and I literally just was down on the ground. And the child came up to me and he put his hands on my face and he kissed my head. And while I was down there, I just grabbed the mother's ankles and I said, I'm here because of you. I am here because of you and your child. And so I've got the story up on my website. The news cameras caught me crying and snotting and peeing all over myself. And just to see the family in real life that I saw on TV was such a blessing to me. And I pray that when you see it, it's a blessing to you as well. Now, look here. We got 2 more hours of blessing you. So don't go anywhere. There's more of the Shaletta Show coming up.